Welcome to the Can Be Now podcast.
We are the best and easiest way to stay connected to what's happening in your hometown. I'm Tyler Frankie.
And I'm Tyler Clausen. In today's episode, we'll be sitting down with Aaron Wolf, the general manager of Filbert's Farmhouse Kitchen in Aurora, a new restaurant being built in the style and spirit of the original 1865 farmhouse that inspired it. Their vision is to combine farm-to-table dining with the talents of award-winning master chefs for dishes that will bring local residents and Portland-area foodies to their table. And later, we'll be catching up with Matt Morrissey, one of the guys behind Modest City Brewing, who hopes to turn the old police building in downtown Canby Civic Block into Canby's first and much-needed brew pub. But first, the news.
Midterm election results came in Tuesday night, and the big news locally was the passage of the bond proposed by the Canby Fire District. The proposed $4.9 million 10-year general obligation bond was overwhelmingly approved by the district's voters, with over 10,000 ballots cast on the issue and almost 64% in favor. We spoke with Canby Fire District Chief Jim Davis at the watch party at Gwen's Coffee House shortly after the first returns came in. He thanked the district's voters for their support and for engaging in the process.
They read the information, they called, and in the town hall meetings that we held, they all asked very intelligent questions, and they were very supportive, and especially supportive around the remodel of the main fire station as well as the North End Medic Unit on the other side of the railroad tracks. That seemed to resonate with them more than any other issues.
The bond will be used to expand and remodel the district's two existing stations on South Pine Street in Canby and on Highway 170 south of town, and establish a North Side Medical Response Station, which is expected to improve emergency medical response north of the railroad tracks. Funds will also be used to repair and replace apparatus and equipment. The cost is estimated to be 28 cents per thousand of assessed value for the average homeowner in Canby. That shakes out to $78 per year, or about $6.50 a month. All of Canby's races were unopposed, as Mayor Brian Hodson cruised to a fourth term in office, joined by incumbent councilors Tracy Height and Greg Parker, and newcomer Sean Barwick. He will be replacing Tyler Smith, who did not seek re-election. It was a different story in Aurora, where all the races were contested. Incumbent Mayor Bill Gropp's bid for a fourth term was unsuccessful, as his challenger, current city councilor Chris Taylor Salee, won a comfortable victory. The mayor was gracious in defeat, saying he wished his opponent and the council the best. Chris Taylor Salee had been the council's most outspoken voice against one of the major issues facing the Aurora area, a proposed expansion at the Aurora State Airport. Gropp said he felt the two had a, quote, difference in approaches on that issue.
She was more along the lines of, this is what the city deserves, this is what the city wants. Okay. And I was more on the line of, you know, let's collaborate, let's talk, let's all sit down and see what the common solution is that's best for all parties.
Yeah.
And see how we can work towards that. Definitely a difference of approach, you know, and I felt my approach had the highest degree of success.
Yeah.
But, you know, the town understood that, I believe. The town made a choice. I accept that.
Tara Weedman defeated Tim Potter in the race for Taylor Salee's vacated seat, while incumbent Brian Asher retained his position over challenger Jerry King. In county races, it was a good night for the incumbents. Assessor Tammy Little kept her job as she wins her first elected term in the office after being appointed earlier this year, as does incumbent clerk Sherry Hall, who narrowly won re-election over her challenger Pamela White. Incumbent State Senator Alan Olson will continue to serve Canby's district in the state capitol after surviving a strong challenge from Democrat Charles Gallia. And Republican candidate and Canby resident Christine Drazen will take the torch from Representative Bill Kinnemer as she wins her first term in office easily over Democrat Elizabeth Grazer Lindsay. She's a former member of the Canby School District Budget Committee and current Clackamas County Planning Commissioner. Bill Kinnemer declined to seek a sixth term in the House. He served in elective office as a state representative, senator, or member of the Clackamas County Board of Commissioners since 1987. Almost three-quarters of registered Canby voters cast ballots in Tuesday's election. That was higher than county and statewide turnout, which was 66.3% and 67.3% respectively.
Police say their investigation has concluded into the death of 35-year-old Amber Jane Eldridge of Salem, whose body was found Sunday afternoon by search and rescue volunteers at Sawtell Road, about 15 miles south of Molalla. Clackamas County Sheriff's Office Sergeant Brian Jensen said Wednesday that the case was closed and no foul play was suspected. Eldridge had been seen on Sunday, November 3rd, in Molalla when she had told friends she was heading back to Salem. Her body was found in steep, thickly wooded terrain in Santum State Forest, about 700 feet from her vehicle. While the area she was found in is definitely out of the way, we believe she went there intentionally, Jensen said. A cause of death in the case has not yet been released. In a few months, feet on the other side of the world could be wearing shoes that started their lives right here in Canby. It's all thanks to Canby High School student Rachel Biggie and the hundreds of businesses, organizations, and people who contributed to her Souls for Souls shoe drive in October. Rachel did a shoe drive for her 10th birthday after getting the idea from watching the Disney Channel. She raised over 500 pairs of shoes. She doubled her goal this time around, and she hit it, collecting a total of 1,045 pairs of shoes from Canby and the surrounding communities. Collection bins were placed at the four Al's Garden Center locations, Gwen's Coffee House, St. Patrick's Catholic Church, the Canby Fire District, the Wild Hair Saloon Canby, and other places around town. The shoes will be distributed to needy adults and children in the U.S. and around the globe, some of whom have never owned a pair of shoes before. The footwear will provide relief and create sustainable jobs in poverty-stricken and war-torn areas. Rachel will get a first-hand look at the impact in March, when she and her mother travel to the Dominican Republic and assist Souls for Souls in distributing shoes at schools and orphanages. Police beat for the week of October 16th through the 22nd. On October 16th, at 3:45 p.m., an individual walked into the Canby Police Department, took property from the lobby, and left. That probably wasn't the best idea that they've ever had. Officers were able to identify the suspect through video surveillance. The suspect was interviewed at their home and later transported to a medical facility for a mental health evaluation. On October 17th at 12:20 a.m., an officer stopped a vehicle on North Elm Street for expired tags. During the course of the stop, officers located methamphetamine and heroin paraphernalia in the vehicle. They also confirmed the license was felony suspended and the vehicle was uninsured. The driver was subsequently taken into custody. Later that day at 8:25 p.m., police stopped a vehicle for speeding. The driver was cited for speeding, and both the driver and the passenger were cited for being minors in possession of marijuana. On October 18th at 4 p.m., officers received a report of a fraudulent for rent ad on Craigslist. Apparently, an individual had responded to an ad for a rental home in town and had made contact with the purported landlord. However, it turned out the person really had nothing to do with the property. On October 19th at 7:12 a.m., officers witnessed a speeding vehicle crash into another vehicle on Southeast 1st Avenue. Officers determined the driver of the suspect vehicle had a suspended license and that the vehicle's license plates had been switched. They later learned the vehicle had also been reported stolen. During a search of the vehicle, officers seized methamphetamine, heroin, miscellaneous drug paraphernalia, and a stolen handgun. Finally, on October 21st, officers made contact with a man who had reportedly been attempting to steal items from a local store. Police advised the man to leave the store and not return. The dude should have stopped while he was ahead. Instead, he got into the police's radar again later that same night after they saw him drinking alcohol in a public park. He was taken into custody after officers found he had an active warrant for his arrest from the Oregon State Parole Board.
Okay, so my guest today is Aaron Wolf. He's the general manager of a new restaurant here in Aurora, Philbert's Farmhouse Kitchen. Aaron, how are you?
I'm doing great. Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for being on the program.
Absolutely.
So, Aaron, can you tell us just a little bit about who you are to start with?
I'm the general manager here. Yeah. I've been in the restaurant industry basically my whole life from the time I was 15 years old. My first job washing dishes, a little 24-hour diner in Corvallis.
That's cool.
Yeah. And really lucky enough to work with a lot of good people and kind of progress my career, and ended up moving up here with my now wife to the Portland area. Gosh. Probably 15 years ago.
Yeah, a lot of good dishwasher jobs in Portland.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I washed dishes all over. No, I had actually become a manager actually before, gosh, right? I was 21, totally unprepared and ready. Yeah. But
have you always been in this kind of restaurant as far as sort of independent or more corporate or all over the board?
A little bit of both, but mostly corporate. I spent 11 years with Pacific Coast Restaurants / Restaurants Unlimited, which own and operate the Newport Seafood Grills, Portland Seafood Company, Portland City Grill, Stanford's, those restaurants. Yeah. So I spent quite a bit of time with them.
I'm a big fan of theirs.
Everybody. It was a really amazing training ground for a lot of managers and food service people in general for a long time, especially back in the PCR days. It was really special place. Yeah.
Cool. So this restaurant, tell me the owner's names.
Warren and Bernice Bean. They're a local family.
Yeah. And they own the original farmhouse. Can you tell us just a little bit about the farmhouse that kind of forms the heart of this new restaurant?
Yeah, sure. It's kind of funny. I think it was originally designed when they purchased the farmhouse, they thought that was going to be the whole thing, whole restaurant.
For a restaurant.
And of course it kind of grew from there. But the farmhouse originally built in 1865. It's called the Moeller House. So obviously a Moeller family back in the day a long time ago were the original owners and builders of the rest of the house. And
We're sitting
in a room 150 years later after it was built. It's pretty interesting. Pretty cool.
And it's interesting because we just took a tour of the restaurant, and we'll get into this a little bit. But you, one of the big concepts as far as how it was designed is all about this different intimate spaces. The room we're in now is super intimate, man. We're in this tiny little second floor room of a 150-year-old building.
And the one light we had on went out.
Oh, great. Yeah. Sort of sitting here in the dark as well. A little creepy, but
Halloween.
Yeah, well, at least we'll have the audio if somebody gets us. So,
right, exactly.
Be like a Blair Witch type deal. but anyway, so the Beans purchased this farmhouse, wanted to do a restaurant, originally thought that the restaurant would just be the farmhouse. Mm-hmm. Obviously, at some point, changed their mind and have done a much larger expansion. Let's talk about kind of what we just did as far as walking around and seeing what folks will see when this place opens.
Yeah, sure. So kind of our concept is a fine dining place to eat. It's a fine dining fit and finish of the building, fine dining quality food, but we're not necessarily at a fine dining price point. We don't want to take out our ability to connect with the people in Aurora and Canby, although plenty of those people I'm sure will love to be able to go somewhere that'll have a food quality that we're going to offer and have a building that we're going to offer and have the ability to come in shorts and a t-shirt and then also
and sandals.
Socks. Right, and socks especially. But also have the ability to dress up and go out and feel at place.
In
this place. So we're going to have a couple of different dining spaces. Mm-hmm. One of them is a more formal dining room. One of them is a bit more relaxed. And then we have a back bar and a bar top to sit up at.
Yeah.
And that's upstairs. We also have a veranda, so an outdoor patio that's covered. It'll have heaters. Mm-hmm. Really nice little relaxing spot.
You can really tell that you guys put a lot of thought into basically making the new addition look as much as you could, kind of reflect the... Obviously, it's a lot larger, has a different purpose, but as much as you could put in little touches and really keep this kind of spirit of the original house. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Well, the Bean family really wanted to, again, kind of honor what this is, which is an old farmhouse, and honor the community. So the fit and finish and the things you're talking about, they want to make it look like the farmhouse that that's out front of our property that's sitting on the highway there. They want to make you feel like there's old farmhouse feel inside as well. So those finishes are, you know, from the light fixtures, the two beautiful lights right out front as you drive up in front of the front door, to the bathroom light fixtures, to all kinds of decor throughout the restaurant. But they're trying to honor the community to a farming community, right? Aurora is based on farming. It's the backbone of what it's been for hundreds of years at this point. So, we're trying to be a farm to table, farm to fork type of restaurant. Yeah. So again, kind of honoring that tradition of Aurora.
It's really cool because obviously this is a new restaurant and there's the new addition that's part of it. But at the same time, it's cool that you can come in and sort of have that same feel that you would have if you came to this place, 100 years ago. It's cool to keep that alive even with the newness. So we'll talk about the food. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
Real quick, I think there's an interesting story that I saw on your website as far as Bernice Bean. Part of the inspiration for the intimacy that is really at the heart, you say intimate a lot as we were walking around, actually came out of a trip I believe she took to Italy.
Yeah,
interestingly enough. Can you talk about that at all?
Well, she'd be best to talk about it, but from my understanding, because this is, now third hand, but her telling me directly the story is she just was blown away when she went to Italy and had dining experiences there. Now, speaking for me personally, there's a lot of places in Portland and in the greater Portland area where dining isn't, we love to eat. We're a foodie city. We're a foodie area, right? We go out to eat a lot, and service and all those things and are just lacking in a lot of places, to be quite honest.
Okay.
And so going back to her story, Bernice's story, she was just so blown away by the service she got and the food and just the fact that it was a community gathering place. The restaurant, the cafe, was a place where people would just come together.
For a long time, right? People would come and linger. And it wasn't like a quick, 45-minute turnaround. Like,
give me my food, I want to get out of here.
Exactly, right. Well, I got to go catch my show. Game starting.
Exactly, the game, So ultimately, I think that really drove her passion to grow into what this is going to be.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And I think there's a real need for that, not just in Aurora, kind of in the Canby area, just a place that is more friendly to that, to just, just lingering time, quality time type thing. So.
Absolutely. And, I'm a Cambyite myself. I've lived there for over a dozen years, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's talk about the food. I'm kind of hungry now, so I'm dreading this. But
it's going to be terrible.
So tell me about the inspiration behind the food, the model that you have in creating your recipes and some of your signature dishes. We can talk about those as well, even though it'll make my mouth water.
Right. Well, good. So essentially, again, back to the concept is that it's a farmhouse, 1865. So we're looking at making American comfort food. Hmm. Farm to fork, farm to table is what I spoke about earlier. So sourcing our ingredients from local areas and essentially doing American comfort food with modern culinary skill and expertise. So, you think of American comfort food, you think of fried chicken, pork chops, steaks.
Yeah.
You think of chicken dumplings, pie. Yeah. So I'm a huge... My wife always gets mad at me because I always say, I don't even like cake. She loves to bake cakes.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't even like cake. I love fruit pies.
Yeah.
And we have an apple pecan caramel crumble that is just unbelievable.
I hate you so much.
I know, right? You're welcome. And, so things like those are our American comfort foods, Pacific Northwest comfort foods.
Yeah.
Filbert's Farmhouse Kitchen. Filbert's is a beautiful local term for a hazelnut.
Yeah.
People from here call it that, not from other places.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, Aurora being a filbert kind of capital of Oregon, we're going to feature filberts quite a bit on our menu, hazelnuts.
Yeah, for sure.
But, signature items like you were talking about. We have an iron skillet green chili cornbread topped with an onion and bacon marmalade that I just... I got to tell you, I could eat 2 pounds of that. It was amazing.
Yeah, and that's just one piece, I think.
Right, exactly. It is, it is. And then, you know, just foods like that.
Yeah.
That
fried really, chicken.
Fried chicken, absolutely. Yeah. Meatloaf, meatballs.
Yeah.
You know, things that you think of in those terms, like, hey, mom used to make that. Or even foods that they made in this home in the late 1800s, early 1900s, working on a farm, you know?
Yeah. So. Cool. Well, you guys can probably hear in the background the sound of them cracking some filberts down there. No, they are still under construction here as we're having our conversation. Still hard at work. You've got crews here on the site.
Looking forward to actually meeting the people that keep driving through the parking lot and say, hey, when are you going to open?
what's going on?
Yeah, and the neighbors who, you know, you walk by their house when you go to walk to your car or whatever,
sure.
and they stop you and ask you, oh, I see you're coming from that building. What's happening? Tell me about it.
Yeah.
And those are the people that I'm just really excited to meet and have them see what we're kind of already super giddy about, because again, there's nothing like this around. I mean, now we're talking about Canby and Aurora and our little communities that are near us, right? But I mean, there's nothing like this anywhere close to us.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be really special and different. Yeah. So I'm excited.
Yeah. And it really seems like your model or your idea is to kind of serve both, you know, obviously be something, like you said, for the community that's not here, but also hopefully, you know, people that are coming to tour, you know, be tourists in our area, you know, would be interested in, or maybe pull people from Portland. It's kind of the hope, is that right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You know, there's...
With that quality and the farm-to-table, which is appealing to many foodies and things as well. So
exactly. I mean, just think about this. How many of us drive to Portland all the time to get food?
Yeah.
I mean, we do it all the time.
I can't say on the Canby Now podcast, but...
Yeah, I know, right? I mean, we only go to local restaurants.
Yeah, of course.
But with that being said, I mean, people will come. If you've got a good product, people will come to it. But
for sure.
Ultimately, Aurora's kind of a neat place with the antiquing... there's lots of wineries out in the area. People come through for those reasons.
For sure.
I mean, there's a million and one reasons why people are out here, and we just want to capture those people as well and invite people from the outlying communities like you're talking about that will actually travel here, make it more of a destination, because ultimately our outdoor areas are really going to be featured, and they're going to be different and exciting and worth the trip.
Cool. Well, it is exciting. Thanks so much for taking time out from your busy preparations to talk to us and share some of your concept. It's really cool. Any last minute things you want to share as far as social media, website, things that people can check out right now until you actually open and they can come see for themselves?
Absolutely. Well, you can always stop. I encourage people, if they're interested right now, to stop by the location.
Yeah.
And I'll personally come and greet you and show you around a little bit, depending on what's going on inside.
Right.
But outside of that, filbertsfarmhousekitchen.com is our website. I think people can get a real good idea of who we are there.
Yeah.
And then also, we are always looking for good people at this point too, because we're still hiring staff. So
I'd love to put up.
Yeah, absolutely. Back of the house, front of the house. We're still looking and really want to bring in people that are excited about what we're doing.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Any taste tester needs?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm looking for some.
I'll give you a buzz.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is amazing.
So you got 60 feet across by 100 feet long, 6,000 square feet. These beams right here that run along are all single tree. So this isn't like composite put together. This is one Doug fir beam. When it cleans up, it's going to clean up probably to the whole roof structure here is going to clean up to probably a shade lighter than that.
Yeah. How old are the beams?
Well, this was built in 1926.
That's awesome.
So,
yeah, like
the 20s.
You can't even
put words to how perfect this space is for something what you want to do.
No, it's ideal.
Yeah.
It's 6,000 square feet is big enough that you can have a full, you know, small brewery production facility, kitchen, commercial kitchen, and still have enough space for, you know, 100, 150 seats. And then you'd have a big, huge commercial walk-in for the brewery, for all the beer that we brew would be about here. Then the brewery operations are back in here. So you can tuck all of the really cool stainless tanks that are tall. You can tuck them, you know, underneath here. We would have a commercial entrance there, and so that we can have all the things. So the brewing would be done. We would have it separated off from the main diet, but we would have like storefront windows, kind of like that, but smaller, so that you can see everybody doing their thing in the brewery.
Cool. Where do you get the name from?
The City Hall, when it was built in 1937, it was built by one of the Alphabet soup organizations
from the New Deal.
It was the WPA, the Works Progress Administration.
Right.
When they built it, the City Hall next door in 1937, they hailed it as the prototype for a modest city hall that they were going to build all across the country.
Yeah.
And that kind of resonated with us. We thought that was neat. So that's why we went with Modest City Brewing.
I love that. That's cool.
It has a story behind it. It fits Canby. You know, I'm sure that somebody will dislike it on the internet, but
of course.
But that's okay.
Yeah. I'm already writing my comments.
Right, okay, in his head.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
How dare you? How many
angry emojis is there?
Yeah.
I think four is appropriate. Yeah.
And it was the working title for a long time until we were like, maybe we'll think of something better, and it just never really came. So we stuck with that.
Cool, man.
But, when this gets done, you see, like, these cool cast iron tie-ins up here, like that. Those, you can't get that.
Yeah.
Like, that's not something that you can find anywhere. And, it's just really impressive. So when it all gets built out, these brick stanchions here will remain exposed, but all of this stuff, this masonry tile, or masonry bricks rather, that'll all end up getting seismically reinforced, because if there was a substantial earthquake right now, it wouldn't stand a chance. So they need to do all the upgrades to that. They have to put a new roof on it. I mean, you can see where the roof is not doing too great. So they'll have to put a brand new roof on it. And but obviously the bones would remain.
Cool.
You could just call that hole a skylight, and everyone would be.
Well, that's no. That conversation's happened, my friend.
Yeah.
I was like, you're crazy not to get some sort of life. My idea was either to do that. Or to see these cutouts where it goes from the A-frame roof to the short roof.
Yeah.
So like these little diamond-shaped cutouts doing some sort of like diffused light through that would be neat. But that's expensive. So money I don't have, my friends.
Morrissey and his partners have a letter of intent with Hanlon Development, the owner of the Canby Civic Block, to bring their vision to life at the old police headquarters. But they're still working to secure financing for the massive remodel that's needed. They have competition as well. Local brewers Jared and Sarah Sloss are also looking to open Canby's first microbrewery, and they have a little momentum after winning Hanlon Development's Small Business Bootcamp pitch contest this weekend. Their prize was $1,000 cash and a free month of rent in the Canby Civic Block if they choose to locate there.
And that's our show. Special thanks to our guests today, Aaron Wolf and Philbert's Farmhouse Kitchen. Hey, if you like what you heard, please let us know. Write a review for us on Facebook, iTunes, or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss our latest episodes. On our next show, we'll be dropping a day early on Sunday. It's Veterans Day, and you'll hear all about the incredible story of local World War II veteran Louis Bozell, who helped the Allies secure a crucial victory on the black sands of Iwo Jima, and later witnessed the bombing of Hiroshima.
When the A-bomb went off, we never saw that aircraft go over. Of course, it didn't come back. it went on and landed in Russia, I think. But we could see the smoke and stuff from it.
If you have a news tip or an idea for a guest we should invite on our program, or suggestions for how we can improve, please contact us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CanBeNow, or on our website, CanBeNowPod.com. Thanks for listening.